A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal, Özil. Marca Mesut Özil. El centro de Özil, Giroud, gol. Gol del Arsenal, gol de Giroud.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Are you well?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad, to everyone's surprise.
Yeah.
I'm all right. How about you?
I'm also all right. I did have quite a tragic incident over the weekend, unfortunately.
Go on.
I ever so slightly burned the roof of my mouth with some pizza.
Oh, no.
I know.
You did tell me you were having some pizza, and I thought to warn you, but yeah. I did not.
Well, I hope you're happy with yourself. Because it's vaguely uncomfortable this morning.
And I feel responsible. I feel responsible.
You'll know better next time. Next time I'm having pizza, I want a warning from you that it's possible that I might slightly singe the roof of my mouth with hot cheese.
Hot cheese, of all things. Was it worth it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was delicious.
Well, there's some consolation.
Pizza is great, you know.
It transpires.
Yeah.
It's delicious, yeah.
So yeah, I can put up with that vague feeling of slight pain for the deliciousness of it all. On top of that terrible thing that happened to me, it was a terrible weekend for your pal Tim.
Oh, I know, but you know, it's good, isn't it? It's funny. Schadenfreude is the thing where you laugh at Tim Sherwood. From a distance.
Sherwood Freude.
Exactly.
Tim and Schoide Freude, I don't know.
I do feel sort of vaguely... I feel like this has happened for me. I feel like it's a personal gift from the gods to me.
After
Tim Sherwood's lost his job.
After all the tragedy and terrible things that have befallen you because of Arsenal wins, this is the universe giving you a little bit back.
I think more than a bit. This I think on balance, 2015's been a good year for me now. just in that one moment, because I did fear, like in the spring when he saved Villa from relegation and led them to the FA Cup final, I thought, have I been wrong all this time? Does he know what he's doing? And to have the fact that he doesn't so gloriously revealed is a wonderful scenes.
So you had an extra big glass of Ribena last night to celebrate, I'm sure.
Absolutely, yeah. Big old jug of Vimto. And delighted by that. I mean, it's been a pretty great weekend, all in all, football-wise.
Yeah, it has. I mean, from our point of view, obviously, we won, and we'll come to that in a few moments' time. But other people around us dropped points. Chelsea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm thinking about that picture again. Even just thinking about it makes me laugh.
It's quite extraordinary.
Do we know exactly what happened? Because from what they were saying on Match of the Day, they said that Jose Mourinho was invited into the referee's room and then sent off. A couple of tweets, Sky, were saying that Jose Mourinho went to the referee's room or tried to get into the referee. The assumption I had made was that he went bananas and went like banging on the referee's door and was subsequently, you know, sent off and not allowed to watch the game from the bench in the second half. But Match of the Day said he was invited to the referee's room at halftime, which seems unusual.
Yes, I mean, it's much worse to be ejected from a party you've been invited to than one you've just crashed of your own accord.
Yeah.
I don't know. I assumed, like you, that he had just burst in unannounced and started screaming about conspiracy theories. But if he was asked in, God knows what he must have done to have so upset the referee. Probably accusations of bias. I mean, I imagine that's the sort of perfunctory response, but brilliant that he then had to go and spend, you know, time up in the West Ham director's box, I think.
Yeah, standing at the back of the director's box.
Oh, dear. I mean, have you seen Danny Dyer's little video.
Yeah, I saw it. I mean, and I thought, well, I didn't quite know what to think about that, because obviously Danny Dyer is a tremendous cunt, and Jose obviously. Mourinho is also a tremendous cunt, and there's not even the enemy
it's
of
Sophie's
my enemy
choice.
Thing. Yeah,
yeah exactly. Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't even any good. If he'd actually done something good, you know, like
no,
called
I know.
Him something, he just kind of skulked in behind, and one of his gimp mates made a face at the camera. You know, I feel like that was a really missed opportunity. You know, he could have just stood there beside him. But I bet that red face guy, you know, the red face guy that hangs around Chelsea.
Yeah. Old red face. Yeah, old red face. John Redface is his name.
he would have probably stepped in, but you'd have been tempted just to stand there beside him and just sort of niggle away at him. You know, 10 men.
Of course.
That was very, very harsh. Very harsh yellow card. The second one, very harsh for Matic there. You must be feeling particularly aggrieved. Oh, my goodness. Oh, look at that decision. Gone against you again. God, oh, my. They are literally all out to get you. Just in his ear for the entire 45 minutes. That's what he should have done. But now he just kind of, he wandered by. But still, the misery, the pain, the suffering of Jose is delightful for the rest of us.
So are we in a position now, do you want to see him sacked? Like, would that be sort of like, you know, would that make you as happy as it made me to see Sherwood go, no, you want to see this extend?
Not yet. I mean, ultimately that would be good, but not yet. I mean, I'd like to see it get worse for him. I would like to see him literally lose his mind. I think that's happening. I think it is happening to a certain extent, but I would like to see just a full-on absolute meltdown. You know, I think we're owed that after the years of abject cuntery that he has foisted upon the world of football. I think we're owed that, in the same way that the universe owed you for all the broken bones and heartbreak and everything else by sacking Tim Sherwood. I think the universe owes the rest of us, like Mourinho, just spiraling. And I think to a certain extent, we've spoken about it before, I think he is actually self-destructing. And I think some of the stuff that he's doing is deliberate. You know, it's he's doing it on purpose to perhaps exacerbate the situation and maybe get himself fired.
Maybe.
You know, if he's sent off for something he said to a referee, and we can only assume that it's something he said to the referee, he didn't like try and, you know, give him a wedgie or anything like that, then, you know, he must know. You know what you can say to a referee and what you can't say to a referee. And if he tried to burst into the referee's room, you know, that's self-destructive behavior as well. But for the time being, in the same way that I was thoroughly enjoying the job that Brendan Rodgers was doing at Liverpool, I'm thoroughly enjoying Jose's work at the moment, so I want him to continue.
Okay, even though Tim Sherwood is available as a potential replacement, that wouldn't swing it for you.
Oh, yeah, well, I think Tim is probably going to be available in a few months' time as well. I don't think there's going to be any rush.
That's true. That is true, yeah. No immediate rush on his services.
No. So good fun to watch all that happening to other people. And, of course, it's made better. My Mrs. Blogg said to me, we were watching Match of the Day, and she said, does Arsenal winning, is that made better for you when stuff like that happens to Chelsea? And I said, yeah. Of course.
Yes, it is.
It is much better. And I enjoyed our win, but, you know, when other things sort of provide the icing on the cake, it's even more glorious. But a really good win for us against an Everton team that are quite tough. And there were shades of last season's game in this one, weren't there?
Yeah, definitely. It really reminded me of the one, I think, was it December 2013, that was the 1-1 where Gerard De Lefebvre scored late on. I got all the vowels in his name there, didn't I?
I really
emphasised it. Yeah. We scored that late equaliser. And that was a game where we were already top and sort of trying to extend our lead. Do you remember the one?
Yeah.
And
I think Ozil scored quite late, didn't he?
Ozil scored quite late, and it looked like we'd done it, and then they pegged us back. And this felt a bit like that as well, because we had those couple of minutes where we've got this habit now where we score a goal and then we score another one straight away. It's
good.
Very exciting.
I like it.
We all like it. We all enjoy it. I don't know how that comes about, but it just seems that we're invigorated by the first goal.
Yeah.
Rush on and get the second.
Well, it was great, wasn't it? Because if you look at it from the kickoff, now Giroud has scored the first goal. They kick off and play around with it at the back, and it's a Giroud tackle that wins the ball back for Alexis, and Alexis then gets fouled, and in we go. So, you know, that kind of high pressing, thing really worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And so, you know, but the goal for half time was a bit unfortunate, I thought, that they got back. Obviously, the deflection didn't help matters.
Yeah.
And then the second half, we looked a little bit leggy to me. We looked like what we were, just a team who absolutely, you know, ran and thought their hearts and heads out against Bayern Munich in midweek.
Yeah, yeah, you could see certainly in the last 20 minutes that was becoming an issue. But at the same time, we had chances. You know, we had really good chances to extend the lead. Giroud hit the bar, Ozil hit the post, Flamini brought on with 9 minutes to go, right? And he's a defensive midfielder. You're not quite on the ropes, but you need to just shore the game up, right? You need to make your midfield more secure. And where's Flamini? Fucking playing centre for Arsene Wenger said afterwards. I told him afterwards I didn't bring you on to play centre forward.
And he was going absolutely mad on the sidelines, Arsene Wenger, honestly. He was screaming at Flamini to get back. Like, there was the one where Flamini had the header at goal that went straight at the keeper.
Yeah.
And Arsene, I think, was more annoyed about the fact that Flamini was in that position than that he had missed the chance. he was, like, tearing his hair out. But Flamini's obviously thinking of his numbers, you know. He's got the goals against Spurs, and now he's on a roll.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's probably a little bet on who's going to be the highest scoring midfielder or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he wants to win that money. Clearly, it was just fucking crazy. Got away with it a little bit, but you know, you'd like a little bit more discipline from a player of that experience.
Ideally,
but there you go. He's very much his own flam.
He is indeed. But I really loved our first goal, I have to say. And Giroud, who got it, was excellent, I thought, throughout the game.
Yeah, he was due a start. I think it was part of it was because the fact he's been scoring, coming from off the bench, and I think the manager in some way needs to be able to reward that by giving him a start in certain games. You know, because if you're on the bench and you're scoring every time you come off it, what more can you do to convince a manager to put you in the team? And I think it was quite clever to do that, obviously, to reward those good performances and those goals, but by starting him. But I thought, like, from the first moment, he was really on it. You know, some games you feel like it passes him by a little bit, right? We've spoken about it before, that he's not quite aggressive enough. He's not quite in the game as much as you would like, but there was an early kick out from Cech and he pushed his way in front of the Everton defender, held him off, took the ball down, laid it off, and that kind of set the marker for his entire performance, I thought.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought he had the better of Jagielka and Stones, and you know, I think he showed how much he still has to offer. And it's a risk. It was a risk changing the front line, because I think he does enforce a different style. But then, you know, our goal came about from a header, from a cross, which you just wouldn't get with Walcott in the side. So, you know, they each got their own strengths, clearly.
Yeah, I like that bit as well, where the chance came to Ozil and the referee blew for a foul. But basically, he went up for a header and smashed the two central defenders out of the way. You know, that physical presence that he's capable of, it was great to see. It was great to see that.
It was. But his goal was all about the pass, really. Brilliant pass, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes, just perfect. Perfect. I mean, in the area where the goalkeeper couldn't get it, it was perfect for him. He knew he just needed to flick it, and it was going to be a goal. Just brilliant. That's 7 assists now so far this season for Ozil. I thought Ozil as well throughout was outstanding. If we talk about the team and some of the players looking a little bit tired, looking a little bit leggy, that wasn't the case with him. I didn't think that he looked that affected by it. And there was one moment late on where he picked the ball up from Giroud, sort of towards the byline, deep in their half, did a couple of little step-overy turns, came back around, played a 1-2 with Giroud, and I think that's the one where he hit the post. And that was really late in the game. And, you know, that was just full of running and full of effort and endeavour. It was great.
And when he hit the post, he kicked the ball hard. That was exciting to see. It's not often you see that, is it, that he puts his foot through it and, you know, really has a shot with some venom in it. So I did like that.
Yeah.
I heard an interesting anecdote on Sky's Sunday Supplement show. I know, unusual. From Andy Dunn, I think it was, and it made me think of Ozil's assist, which is that Jose Mourinho used to say when he was watching Real Madrid train, he could turn away from the training ground and he would still know when Ozil had the ball, because when he kicked the ball, it made a different sound.
No
like the
way.
Quality, yeah, that was what he claims. He's like, the quality of his touch, the way he struck the ball, was like qualitatively different from everyone else.
What's he got, fucking bad ears?
But I kind of know what he means, because when he clipped that pass in for Giroud's goal, it was like a golf shot. You know what I mean? It was something just like so nonchalant and so languid about the way he delivered it. And the other thing, and this shouldn't really matter, it shouldn't bother me, but it is quite nice to see Ozil getting a bit of wider recognition now, I think, in English football. You know, I think for a long time he's faced so much criticism. We know all about the nicking a living stuff. But it feels like that tide, I think it turned with the Arsenal fans some time ago, but I think it's turning more broadly now. And it's just nice to see his talents a bit more appreciated, I think.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you can't find enjoyment in the way that Mesut Ozil plays football, or if you think that, you know, because he's not the most physically imposing player, that he doesn't have anything to offer, it's just bizarre. You know, he's just glorious and so talented. And I think he's beginning to have a real influence on the team. He looks like he's more, like he's taking some responsibility, you know? That he's realizing, okay, I am one of the senior players here. I am one of the players around whom this team is built, and I need to contribute in order to make this team successful or to try and achieve the things that it wants to achieve. And maybe that's down to confidence, self-belief, whatever it might be. But it's great. He's been so good this season so far. And I hope it lasts.
Yeah. And another thing I would say, this is not to detract from Ozil at all, but I think, you know, Santi Cazorla, I was looking at the chance creation stats, and the one I'm looking at is Squawker, and Ozil's created 42 chances this season, but Cazorla is on 34, and considering that he plays in that deeper position, he's doing incredibly well as well on a creative front. And I also thought that against Everton, his set-piece delivery was quite a lot better than it has been, you know, over the past couple of years. And I felt like we looked like a threat at set pieces, which was exciting and unusual.
Yeah. The whipped delivery, and certainly from the corners as well. I think Gabriel has got a goal or two in him somewhere. Because,
me too.
Yeah, he's been noticeably good from set pieces since he arrived. I remember one of the first games he played, he had a couple of really good chances. It might have been the one against Borough in the FA Cup, but he looks a bit of a threat from set pieces. And there's something, when you're defending corners, and if there's a sequence or a collection of corners, and as a defending team, you're not getting to the ball as much as the opposition, you know, you begin to lose a little confidence, I think, in terms of how you defend. So there's sort of a weight and accumulation of corners and set pieces. I think that was evident with the second goal, because we'd had a number of corners before that, because Orla whips in a great ball. Again, the goalkeeper wasn't great. Again, the defending wasn't great, and Arsenal gets on the ball, and it's 2-0. So, yeah, it was good. Yep. But again, the delivery is really important.
Absolutely, I would agree with that. What about Everton's equaliser? Do you buy into the blame Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain theory that seems to have been circulating? I've seen a bit online.
Yeah, I think we'll touch on Ox in the questions part, but about that particular thing, you know, there's a lesson there for him, certainly, and that's about decision-making in the final third.
Right.
He should have played it outside to Bellerin, and if he played it outside to Bellerin quickly, we probably would have made it 3-0, or would at least have had a good chance to make it 3-0. He made the wrong decision by shooting into a crowd of players. He did his best to try and get back. And I think in some ways he's been really quite unlucky. He's going through this period where every mistake that he makes is ending up in a goal. You know, it's happened a number of times this season already.
It is crazy.
Yeah, you know. So I think there is an element of bad luck to it, but it's also something that he has control over. That had he made the right decision by making the pass, then that wouldn't have happened. But I think when you lose the ball on the edge of the box, or a shot is blocked, and they go up the other end and score with a deflection, you know, I don't think you can necessarily blame him 100%, but it was avoidable. That's the way I'd look at it.
Yeah, I would concur. And then I suppose, as regards to the second half, the last 10 minutes anyway, two big, big moments, one being the save from Petr Cech, and the other one being, I'm sure you enjoyed that tackle from Gabriel.
Yeah, the Cech save was fantastic. And I suppose that's the kind of goalkeeping that people talked about when you bring a guy in who can win you points. I think Arsene Wenger said that after the game. He won us, you know, the 3 points, or, you know, he played a big part in ensuring that we took 3 points rather than one. Yeah, great save, great reactions. I think we rode our luck a little bit, didn't we? That Lukaku header had him beaten. He was not getting anywhere near that, but it just sort of brushed the top of the bar.
Yeah,
and there were a couple of, actually, that one Gabriel tackle, obviously there was the brilliant reaction that he had where he's sort of pumping the air like he'd scored a goal, which is great. But there was another one, another break, maybe a few minutes before that, and again, he was the guy who got a foot in on the ball and helped us get away. So, another fine display from him.
Yeah, I thought he was excellent. It's very, very nice feeling, isn't it, to sort of lose one of your first choice centre backs to illness. Per Mertesacker seems ill all the time, doesn't he?
Mm.
He's a bit like me, a bit of a sickly child. He needs to wrap up warm.
Get some more vitamins, Per. Come on.
Exactly, but it's nice when that happens and you're not overly concerned. You've got someone who can come in and sort of fill the breach as well as Gabriel did.
Yeah. So, 3 good points. Went top of the table for a little while. We're back into second on goal difference, but a fine position to be in.
Mm, and the Manchester derby was rubbish. Did you see that?
Oh, talk
really?
About boring. Jesus Christ. Yeah. I mean, at least if the football's crap, kick the shit out of each other or something.
Yeah. All very passive, very tepid.
Yeah, not good.
Fun.
Not good. And we have a game tomorrow, of course, in the Capital One Cup. What exactly are you expecting Arsene Wenger to do? I think we'll probably get some team news later on, and we'll get a better idea of what kind of a team he's going to put out. But, you know, to my mind, he's got to rest people like Alexis cannot play. I wouldn't play Ozil, Cazorla, maybe not Coquelin either. You know, he can rotate the defence quite well in the sense that, you know, he's got Gibbs, Debussy to come in, maybe Mertesacker back, Chambers could come in there, might give a start to the guy in goal. It's just maybe further forward we don't really have the depth of squad. I mean, he's going to have to rotate though, isn't he?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, it would be an exaggeration to say their last legs, but the team certainly looked tired in the last stages against Everton. And obviously the Premier League's the priority. I think you're right, the back four is pretty straightforward. You know, you can bring Gibbs in, you can bring Debussy in, Chambers as well, Flamini in central midfield. Oh, I mean, everyone who's on the bench against Everton, you'd imagine, will start.
Mm.
It is a little bit trickier in the forward part of the pitch. I mean, Joel Campbell will play. Maybe Theo Walcott will play, having not played at the weekend. But
yeah.
Beyond that, I don't know. I wonder if we will see a couple of youngsters. Alex Iwobi had another good week last week, scoring twice against Bayern in the Youth Champions League, including a screamer. Did you see it?
Oh, yeah. Amazing. I was chatting to Andrew Allen on the whole Gmail chat thing, and the game was on because it was streaming on YouTube, and it was like, well, Jesus, this is a pretty boring game, isn't it? And then within 8 seconds, Iwobi smashes it into the top corner. So I'll try that on Tuesday if he gets a chance.
Yeah, so he's one who could be in contention. Other than that, I don't really know. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Arsene says, but I do expect quite heavy rotation, certainly.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, we'll see. I think that's on the telly tomorrow night as well.
Yeah.
Sheffield Wednesday versus Arsenal in the Capital One Cup. All right. Well, that just about does it from part one, unless you've got anything else from the weekend that's caught your eye.
No, I think we've covered it off. I mean, I'd happily laugh at Tim Sherwood again, but other than that...
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, dear. Okay,
all right.
Great.
Okay, I think that'll do it. Okay, that's part one. We're back with your questions in part two right after this.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two, where we answer your questions sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog. James, I'll let you go first in the spirit of Tim Sherwood being sacked.
Oh, well, look, let's have some more laughing at the misfortune of others, because this question comes from at Guna Adam, and he says, which has been more enjoyable this season, Van Persie's career collapse or Mourinho's?
That is a fantastic question. What I would say is that, you know the way some days you feel like eating pizza?
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And pizza's delicious, even if it does sometimes burn the roof of your mouth very slightly. We'll forgive it then.
Don't bring this up again. Yeah, forgive me as well for not warning you.
Yeah, I know. Look, I'm holding a grudge here, but I'd say it'll pass in a year or two.
Okay, great.
So, yeah.
Only
so,
52 podcasts to go until the grudge is over.
So that day you feel like pizza. Another day you might feel like a burger. A burger, of course, is delicious with bacon and cheese and some lettuce and tomato and onion, whatever you like, however you like your burger. People like different things on their burgers. Do you ever try a fried egg on top of a burger?
No,
You should. It's delicious.
Okay.
I recommend it. Anyway, so pizza one day, burger the next day, both things are delicious. And it's hard to say that one thing is better than the other. It just depends on your mood. So what I'm saying is that I'm enjoying them both. Some days, like today, when it's more in the forefront of my mind, I'm enjoying Mourinho's misery a great deal. Because, you know, it's there. It's fresh. We saw it. We saw how gutted he looked at the back of the press box when the goal went in and everyone's celebrating around him, people taking selfies of him surreptitiously. And he's standing there looking very unhappy. And then there are other times when Van Persie comes more into focus and, you know, I don't know what's going on with him now. I haven't paid much attention over the last week or two. But, you know, we've seen the pictures of him on the bench, looking unhappy, looking miserable. Yeah. So I enjoy those too. So one of them is the equivalent of pizza and the other is the equivalent of burger. But obviously, in an enjoyment sense, I'm not saying that Van Persie is like a burger because burgers are great and he's clearly an asshole. And Mourinho is definitely not pizza because pizza is the food of the gods and he is just a big, huge cunt. So to answer the question, yes.
Perfect. That's good. I think we've solved that.
All right. Cool. I'm glad to kick these questions off in a good way. Okay. This one comes from Clive at Clive PAFC, and he says, "Why is it Arsenal fans have suddenly fallen out with the Ox? Don't we realise we will not win the league with 12 players?" And maybe falling out with the Ox is maybe a bit too strong, but I think people have some concerns.
There was certainly a lot of frustration abounding with his performance. It was, do you know what? It was a little reminiscent of the kind of reaction Aaron Ramsey used to garner a few years ago.
Mm.
And I think that their problems, as you alluded to earlier, are not dissimilar in that Ramsey was often guilty around this sort of 2012 period of overcomplicating matters and maybe trying a little bit too hard. And I think that Ox is not dissimilar in that His decision-making is the major issue in his game. I don't think it's his technical ability. I don't think it's his fitness levels. It seems to be just the choices that he makes, primarily when in possession of the ball. And the only way to get through that is, I think, to simplify and just to focus on the basics, really, and just to, and try and, you know, for example, in that case against Everton, rather than try and the shimmy than the shot, play the simple ball, play the continuity game, you know, play the odds, basically. And I think that is what will help him find some rhythm, some regularity, and then hopefully an upturn in form.
Mm. Yeah, I'd agree with that completely. I think he's got a real chance now, doesn't he, because of Ramsey's absence, in the next few games, to get a run in the team and to build some confidence. And I think confidence is probably an issue as well. Arsene Wenger spoke a few weeks back about how he lacks self-belief, which is kind of unusual because when you see him interviewed, he's a very down-to-earth guy, seems, quite self-confident. He's a funny guy, but maybe on the pitch, he's lacking something there. And I think that when, like Ramsey, you do the simple things really well time and time again, that then gives you a platform for greater expression in your game. Mm. And as we said earlier, though, he seems to be really harshly punished for the mistakes that he makes. You know, other players can make mistakes and it doesn't quite go as badly, but every time he's got like the reverse Midas touch. Everything he touches turns to opposition goal.
The shitus touch.
So, yeah, so I think Arsene Wenger really has a lot of faith in him as a player, but it's down to him to just get his head down, work hard, do simple things, and then worry about the more complicated stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And avoid mistakes.
Avoid mistakes has got to be the key. I mean, it's tricky because obviously he has the ability to do the more complicated stuff. You know, he's got that in his locker, but it just seems that when you're low on confidence, attempting that kind of thing is probably not the way. You don't want to run before you can walk, basically.
Yes, yes. So more walking and then a little bit of light jogging. And
exactly.
Then you could break into a canter. Although horses, only horses canter, don't they?
Yeah, or gallop. I get confused with those two.
Do oxes canter? Can an ox canter?
Probably. It's got four legs. I feel like that's the key. Or it's to do with if the legs work in opposition or not, isn't it?
Right, I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite sure what the technical thing for cantering is, but
I was too big to be a jockey. one of my great regrets.
The canter is a controlled three-beat gait performed by a horse. It is a natural It's a natural gait possessed by all horses, but slower. It's faster than the trot, but slower than the gallop, and is used by all riders. I don't know if only horses can canter, though.
There's a video on YouTube of an ox cantering.
No way. Really?
Well, it says cantering ox.
Are you sure that's not some bloke?
The clue's in the title.
All right, I was just going to say, but
I'll be honest with you. This ox looks a lot like a horse. I mean, I don't know if the horse is called ox or what. I don't know what's going on, but to me, that is a horse.
Right.
I'm not David Attenborough, but I think this is a ruse.
Okay.
I'm only the second person to have ever viewed this video.
I just had a look for it. I can't find it, but I'll take your word for it. I'd say you know the difference between a horse and an ox.
Yeah, there's another one by the same man. Connor Huffman put these up. That's now got 7 views, thanks to my input.
Right.
And it just says, me riding ox. And again, that's a man riding a horse. He's not fooling anybody here.
Yeah.
This is an outrageous coup that he's attempted to pull the wool over our eyes.
Here it is. But, I've actually got some of the sounds from the video. Look, that's him riding ox. It's a fine hat that he's got on. Connor Huffman.
Yep.
Looks like he's somewhere in America, maybe.
Is that an ox, though?
It's definitely not an ox. It's a white, grey horse. Oh, nearly fell over. Jesus.
Yeah, now, see.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That ox just needs to keep it simple.
Yeah. Needs to be more ox-like in his ways. Okay, well, that's enough of Connor Huffman riding ox. So, yeah.
Point being, I think the fans, I don't think they're out of love with him, are they? I mean, I don't think it was sort of... It wasn't one of those where it's sort of like audible howls of frustration to him, you know? That wasn't my impression in the ground. Anyway.
No, I thought he did better as well in the second half. There was more to his game in the second half. He was quite
dangerous.
One
great cross, yeah.
Mm, you know, but yeah, look, just cut out the mistakes. And, you know, they are quite easy to do because they've been, it's just carelessness and lack of the right decision more than anything fundamentally wrong with his technique or his ability as a footballer, I think, unless you count those things as absolutely fundamental. But yeah, I'm confident that he can improve. So,
okay. Well, sort of on a similar note, David Hung asks,
okay.
He's at Kutchpuck on Twitter. Don't worry. It's a clean question. He says, devoted listener from Hong Kong, which is nice.
Hi.
Hello. He says, will we ever see Giroud, Walcott and Alexis three-pronged attack to start?
I don't know, because he doesn't seem to want to play Walcott on the right-hand side anymore.
Yeah, I don't think we will. I'm not convinced we will see that ever.
Yeah.
Unless there's some sort of situation where, I don't know, it's a two-legged affair and we find ourselves many goals down, something like that.
Certainly, but I don't think we'll see it while Danny Welbeck is out, because I think there's an element of caution required. You know the way some people would say, oh, why don't we play three at the back when we had Mertesacker, Koscielny and Vermaelen, if you remember.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of going, well, no, we're playing all of our centre halves, and if something happens to one of them, then we don't really have any replacement, you know. And what's interesting, I think, is, you know, when Giroud goes through these phases where he doesn't score and he has these little droughts.
Yes.
I'm pretty much convinced that those occur at the times when he has been played to the point of exhaustion. Almost, because
seems that way. Doesn't
yeah,
it?
You know, there were times where people have been injured and Giroud has had to play game after game after game. And when he's sharp, for example, that period when he came back after the injury that he got against Everton, remember the broken leg he got when he kicked the ball or blocked the ball or whatever it was, and he came back and went on this fantastic run. But because he was literally the only option we had there, that after a while he got tired and his effectiveness was lessened. He was sort of
exhausted him.
Yeah, we exhausted him. And I think that's been true of other seasons as well, where we haven't had any depth in that position. And we've seen the effect in terms of his goal scoring. So what we have at the moment is this rotation, I guess you would say, between Giroud and Walcott for the starting striker position. And Arsene Wenger spoke about that. He said, I'm going to have to figure out how best to keep them both happy. And, you know, certain games will suit Walcott, certain games will suit Giroud. And I think that's going to happen throughout this season. And the upshot of that is that we'll have two strikers who are relatively fresh. And hopefully that then will translate into performances and goals, keeping them both at a reasonably optimal level of fitness. So I don't think he's going to do anything that will mean, unless he really has to, where he's going to play Giroud and Walcott at the same time. I think they'll overlap now and again, but I don't think for any sustained period we're going to see Giroud and Walcott starting together.
No, me neither, actually. Me neither.
Yeah.
So there you go. Even more opportunity for the Ox to establish himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Over to you.
Okay. Over to me. Here we go. I've got one here. Here it is. Bum, 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 bum. Okay. This one comes from Asfund Osaf. And also there's one here from Chuck Ridwell, who's at Gunnar_Clarence. And they're asking about Petr Cech and about being a little bit unconvinced by him at first. What do we think now?
Oh, I mean, I was always quite keen to...
Yeah, you know, these are mostly directed at me, actually, but I'm asking you the question, so, you know.
Oh, I see. Right, okay, dodging the bullet.
Yeah.
Well, let me bounce it back at you, because, yeah, I can't remember what you said exactly, but I think you were a bit like, well, maybe I'm not... You weren't. I think the fact that he was let go by Chelsea made you think, if they're letting him go, what does that mean? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, maybe. That was the concern, and the fact that he hadn't really played for a year, and that maybe if Chelsea were willing to let him go, that it was to do with the fact that they didn't think he was quite up for it anymore. So yeah, I think that was the concern. But I have to say, Those have been allayed, despite the fact that the opening day against West Ham really wasn't.
That was a worry.
Yeah, that was a bit of a worry. I think the benefits are obvious. He makes big saves. He was brilliant against Bayern. He made a big save late in the game against Everton, which saved us 2 points. The connection that he has, the experience that he has, the calmness that he exudes, probably on the pitch and off the pitch. I would say that there are real benefits to having him around on the training ground and in the dressing room as well that we don't see. A number of players have spoken about it already, that, you know, to have him there makes them feel secure. It helps the back four. It's improved us as a team, our spine, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I'm all for it. I'm a big fan. Still not mad for the hat, but, you know.
Yeah, and another factor, I guess, you know, the little bits and pieces that I've heard out of Chelsea, I think he's been very much missed there as a figure in the dressing room. Mm. I mean, to be honest, on the pitch as well, what with Courtois being out, but I think they've really felt his absence. So I think he is a very influential figure and someone who carries a lot of natural authority. But the main thing is that in the last couple of games, particularly Everton and Bayern, he's made saves that you wouldn't necessarily expect a goalkeeper to make and that feel like difference makers. They don't feel like, oh, well, you know, it just hit him. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Sometimes a goalie makes a save and you feel like, yeah, but he was just kind of in the way. Whereas with Chet, you can sort of see the technique and you can see the way he's positioned himself. You can see the reactions. And I feel like when we signed him, I think it was John Terry actually who made that quote about, oh, he'll win them 12 points.
And, yeah.
You know, it's something that is said, but you don't necessarily just think it will transpire that way. But in the last couple of games, it has felt like he has contributed directly to the winning of points. So he's been a massive addition. Do you think he'll play at Sheffield Wednesday? Any chance? Or
I mean, Matt Macey is very raw. I don't think he's played a game for us. So that's a bit of a risk. Actually, I've got an email this morning. Here it is. Hang on. Let me just find it here. From Rob Silver, and he says, "Hi, Arsblog, love your work, blah, blah, blah." He said, "Not sure if you saw this video published on the 22nd of October showing the boys in training pre-Bayern." There's a link to a YouTube video. And he says, right. "You can see Ospina in the sticks at 1:03 and 1 minute 30. Maybe he's genuinely injured, but who knows? Maybe he picked up the injury in training, of course."
Maybe, although I'm pretty sure Arsene said it was picked up on international duty, although he may have aggravated it.
Mm.
I mean, the conspiracy theorists would say he found out he wasn't starting against Bayern and there was, you know, a fallout. But Matt Macey is exceptionally tall. He's got that going for him.
He is. He's a big, big lad, isn't he?
He's one of the longest goalkeepers around.
One of the longest. I like that. Should use that as a measure of a person's height.
Length, the length of Matt Macey is something quite extraordinary.
My mind went to a different place there.
Well, I know it's like we're having another question from David Hung, but I don't know. It'd be a bit of a risk to throw him in, wouldn't it? So
it would, but is it not also a risk to play your only fit senior goalkeeper in a game that, you know, ultimately isn't the most important in our season?
Maybe, yeah. And his vulnerable head, you don't want to risk him. I don't know. I need to get off this subject. I think Cech's been brilliant. I think Cech's been great. And, you know, I don't think we'll ever really know what happened on that first day against West Ham. I think that goes for almost every member of the team.
Actually, you know what, though? He did an interview with Sport magazine.
Right.
And I thought it was really interesting what he said. He obviously analysed what happened on the day. And he said, it was a bit flat. The game felt a bit flat, and sometimes you need a moment to sort of energize the crowd and energize the team. So when the free kick came in, he made this decision that he was going to go for the ball and maybe try and start a quick counterattack, you know, just to sort of lift the team and lift it. And he said, no, you know, made the wrong decision there. So that was interesting. I could see why it happened. Because again, you know, even at 33, the most experienced players can make the wrong decision, but you could see why he was trying to make it, which I thought was quite interesting.
That is interesting. I mean, the other thing just on that result is that the more the season wears on, the kind of less appalling it looks. West Ham continue to go from strength to strength. So
yeah,
maybe it wasn't too awful.
He's doing a good job there so far, Slaven Bilic.
He is indeed. Right. let's get on with the sensible stuff. So at Damien AFC asks, who in the Arsenal squad would make the best James Bond?
Right. My immediate thought is Alexis, because he's got he's a bit suave. Giroud, perhaps. Again, you know, you could see him with the old martinis, shaken, not stirred. The beard, I got to say, really suits Olivier Giroud.
Caps it off, doesn't it?
Yeah. I was talking to one of my neighbours who called him a massive ride with the beard. So
right.
She was very impressed. But yeah, Giroud could do it. Who else could do it? Not Gabriel. Can't really see Gabriel as James Bond.
No. I mean, could Mesut Ozil be like a left field candidate?
He's got the
stealth.
Yeah. I would have sort of had him as like
the villain.
The villain, yeah. Yeah. He's quite a bit more villainous look to him.
Serpentine.
Yeah. Mm. So yeah, I don't think Mesut Ozil. Mikel Arteta.
Sure. Safe hands, isn't it?
Yeah.
For the role.
He's handsome enough, and you know, Bond would certainly rock that hair, you know.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, when you're running around rooftops. But you know, I'm not mad for James Bond films. These new ones, the old ones are quite good and kitsch and fun, but these new ones are like, they're a bit shit, really.
I haven't really seen them. I don't get too excited.
There was one a few years ago.
Right.
I can't remember. It could have been Quantum of Solace or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I could be misremembering this, but ultimately, the villain was trying to steal water. And that was the whole thing. It was like, oh, come on. Like, he should be trying to blow up the Earth from space in a cooled space station. Not steal some water from like a fucking irrigation farm or whatever it was.
We've all got taps, mate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. There's the whole fucking sea there, man. What are you trying to do?
Just get yourself a bucket. You're away.
Yeah. You know. So that annoys me with them. But yeah.
I think Giroud would be pretty good. I think he ticks a lot of the boxes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's sort of got the... I mean, he'd probably want a stunt double for a lot of the action sequences, I imagine.
Yeah, I'd love to see James Bond do the, like, the finger waggle.
Yeah, the finger waggle when he gets shot.
Mr. Bond, what are you doing? It is the finger waggle of vague pain.
Exactly. But he's got the charm, he's got the looks. I think he'd be good.
All right.
So when Craig hangs up the speedos, give Olivier a call.
Yeah, yeah. A secondary career for him. I can see it happening, actually, yeah.
Okay, cool.
All right, this one comes from Braggy Huffperson, I think, at Bragged on Twitter. And he wants to know, could you ask James if he has ever lost it in the press box when Arsenal have scored, like maybe against Bayern?
Have I ever lost it? Yes, I have lost it. I can't remember specific incidents. It's always a bit embarrassing because you're sat right next to someone who is, you know, a real neutral. And you're sort of incognito, pretending. But there was one goal last season. Late goals. It's late goals that get you.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
There's
nothing like a late goal. I can't remember who it's against, though. But basically, the way the press box is, there's like a little barrier, and then it's the fans. And if you're in the front row of the press box, you sort of almost spill into the fans. And there was a goal where I stood up and ran down the stairs, which was, you know, like, which I think gave me away, but you don't know. I mean, you know, I had to sort of sheepishly make it back to my seat afterwards and be like, oh, I'm just, you know, pretend I was just really happy because I'd made that prediction in a preview or something like that. You know,
I dropped my tennis ball. It ran down the stairs. Yeah. I had to just go get it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Come back, you know, shaking my fist, claiming that meant points for my fantasy team. I don't know. But like it is a tricky balance. Bayern was a great one. I mean, the thing is, the nice one about European nights is that generally that even the neutrals are sort of on the side of, in the press box at least, are on the side of the English teams, which makes it sort of convivial atmosphere. Unless you sit next to a German journalist, in which case very awkward.
Yeah. But fuck them.
I mean, honestly, yeah, it's fine. There's a lot of fans in the press box. I mean, Arsenal are a well-followed club, so there's quite a few there sort of clenching their fists surreptitiously. Don't worry about it. There's plenty on side, but it's not quite as sort of it's not quite as heavy a bias as there is for, say, Liverpool or bizarrely West Ham. West Ham seems to have a lot of fans in the media, but Arsenal have certainly got a decent following.
All right. Okay. One more from you.
One more. Okay. This is from Sam Thayer. It's at Sam Thayer 9000, and he says, would you rather have wooden planks for arms, right?
Yeah.
Or toasters for feet?
I guess...
You've got to have one or the other.
Yeah, see, with toasters on your feet, you could never go swimming.
Very dangerous.
Get electrocuted. Because I'm assuming the toasters are continuously, you know, plugged into electricity.
I think they're sort of wired to you, yeah. They're kind of, there is a current that runs through us all.
Yeah, we all have electric bits in us. So, yeah, that would be, I like swimming. I like going in the sea. That's kind of where I'm at my happiest.
Really?
Where it's somewhere warm and I'm just floating in the sea. I like that.
Well, that would be awkward. You'd have to sort of walk out to sea on your hands.
Yeah, and that essentially would mean I'd drown. Once you got in deep enough, I'd drown. But wooden planks for arms wouldn't be ideal. Picking stuff up would be a challenge. But you would always be on for a game of rounders.
That is true. Also, you'd look like a glider or a plane. I feel like if they were wide enough planks, you could throw yourself off something high and just sort of gently glide.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a scientist, but it seems to me that that's possible. The toasters, I mean, I love toast. I met someone recently who said they didn't like toast.
What kind of monster was this?
I didn't know what to say. I was like, do you like bread? They were like, yeah. And I was like, so what's going on here? I was like, do you like hot bread? Like, if I put some bread in the microwave for you, hot floppy bread, how would you feel about that? And they were like, I'm not sure. And I was like, but toast's definitely out. They were like, yeah, no toast for me.
But, I don't understand.
I was astonished.
Yeah.
Honestly, I didn't know. I was like, I'm not sure we could be friends.
I think that's reasonable. I don't really understand that in the slightest. Toast is great. But let me ask you the important question here. When it comes to toast... Butter, yeah. Toast and butter is good.
Yeah, I'm on board with you so far.
But if you add a conserve of some kind, strawberry jam or marmalade,
okay.
Do you put that over the butter or do you just use the marmalade or the jam on dry toast?
I feel like this is a really big moment for the podcast.
Yeah.
I feel like it could all go wrong. I put it over the butter.
Disgusting.
Oh, is this the end of the podcast?
That's it.
Fuck. So you put it straight on?
Straight on, yeah. No butter. Butter on toast is great, but if you're having jam or marmalade, goes on dry toast. Don't need the butter. Makes it kind of, I don't know. No, I don't like it.
Though.
I don't like it.
There are some, if I have peanut butter, I won't have butter as well. I'm not a madman. That's two types of butter.
You would put peanut butter on buttered toast?
No. I'm saying if I had peanut butter, I wouldn't use butter.
Right.
What about Marmite? Do you ever eat Marmite?
No, but I do sometimes eat Bovril on toast.
With no butter?
Just straight on, yeah. Yeah, it's meaty and delicious and crunchy.
Guys, I think, get in touch, because I don't know who's right and who's wrong here. I mean, someone definitely is. I was going to say, there is no right and wrong. Bullshit.
Yeah.
There is. We need to fight and decide this.
Yeah, the toast etiquette, the toasticate, if you like.
Point being, I'm quite scared of the sea.
Right.
I mean, I'll go in it, but, you know, I am constantly convinced there are sharks. And knowing my luck, there probably will be eventually.
Yeah.
So I think I'll go for the toasty, because I love toast, despite what this person said. I love toast. And I'd always carry a little bit of butter and a conserve on me so I can flaunt your rules, flout these regulations and have the full toast meal available to me whenever I wanted.
Well,
and you can shoot them out of your feet and catch them by hand. Imagine that as a little party trick.
That would be great. And people say we agree too much. I think we found a fundamental disagreement here. I'm going planks and no butter with conserve on toast. So there you go.
There we go.
All right, one more final one. It's not really, you know. This one comes from Emmanuel Eboué. I think this could be his his Halloween one, because he's got a Halloween question. Said, from an arsehole point of view, what is the scariest thing or person someone could dress as for Halloween?
I mean, a Boué would be quite scary if someone just if he just turned up on the field.
11 scary. Aboués.
Yes, that's it. That's it. Any of the medical team, I imagine, are quite frightening. Covered in bits of Abu Dhabi still. Who else is frightening? Mike Dean, quite terrifying.
Yeah.
I find. And a host of managers, really. I mean, I think coming as Sam Allardyce is a legitimate scary costume.
Yeah, that would be pretty gross, all right.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'd say that's too far, if anything.
Mm. Could we make scary names out of Arsenal players? Could we do that? Like Halloween-related names. Gabri Hell.
Gabri Hell.
Gabri Hell.
That's not bad.
Oh, got one. Mikel Teter.
Very good.
Yeah, that was good.
That is very good.
Theo Werewolfcott. What if that guy who was brought on not to play at centre forward got bitten by Dracula? He would then be a flampire.
Very nice.
Yes.
That is good. That's extraordinarily good.
Mm.
I'm just trying to think if there are any more.
Per Mertesacker, because he, you know, like a vampire as well.
That's nice. These are great.
Mm. I feel like the man from East Lower is sitting here now listening to this going, puns.
I know, he's so excited.
Yeah, he's going to lambate
us. I don't think we should do them all, because I think it'll give him something to do on Twitter, won't it, for the next 24 hours.
Yeah.
Keep him busy.
Yeah. Yaya Sonogul.
Yes, that's a great one.
Mm.
Ghoul is a lovely word, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Got a lovely sound to it.
Danny Helbeck.
Helbeck's nice. Yeah. What else? I'm trying to think of other scary things, really.
Monsters and vampires and mummies and...
mummies, yeah.
What else is scary? Sam Allardyce's breasts. They're quite scary.
Yeah. So look, lots of Halloween fun.
Yeah.
To be had.
Anyway, we'll leave it there, and obviously people will make their suggestions on Twitter, and of course, let us know which side of the fence you're on: butter and jam, or just jam.
Yeah, we need to know, guys. Let's end this once and for all.
We should start a hashtag: butter and jam, or just jam.
Brilliant.
Tell us where you are, folks. We'll find the line split right down the middle. Are you evil and hideous like Gunnar Blog, or are you fine and great like me? We'll see.
Good and virtuous.
All right.
Yeah. Have a nice week, everyone.
Yes, do
Enjoy
that.
Enjoy the Sheffield Wednesday game.
Do that. And whatever way you have your toast, I think it's fine. You can have it whatever way you want. But if you're the person that doesn't like toast, get out. Go away.
Just forget it. Why even listening?
Yeah. Get
Fuck
lost.
Off. Fuck off.
Until the next one.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.